Hello and welcome to the talk Porting Mandel Linux to Mobile Phones at FOSDEM 2022. My name is Luca Weiss and I've been mainlining phones since about 2017. I'm also a PostMarketer's core team member and also OpenRazor maintainer and other contributions online and free software. And at work, I'm an Android platform engineer at Fairphone, where I'm basically working on extending the life of mobile phones. So let's start. With the current situation, on the right, you can see kind of a graph how kernel development works in the normal Android market. So it starts off like Linux itself starts off even one layer above as like the Linux mainline, how we call it, or how it is called. Also in this talk, I will be referring a lot to like downstream, which is describing the kernel that gets shipped with a mobile phone. So it starts off like a particular kernel version gets branched into the Linux long-term supported release, for example, the 4.19 release. This then gets modified by Google in the so-called Android Common Kernel. This then again gets modified by the SoC manufacturer, for example, Qualcomm or MediaTek, and they add very SoC-specific drivers on top of this. And then a device manufacturer gets this kernel and modifies it again and adds like device-specific drivers on top. As you can imagine, because of this situation, like more or less every device in existence has their own kernel and their own kernel sources, and they aren't shared with anything, which also means that security issues need to be patched in like every single one of those kernels if it is supposed to be, or if it's still supposed to be secure. It's also very worth noting that Greg Crowe Hartman, the Linux stable maintainer, like from the in this graphic, the top layer, often says that there aren't like really security fixes. So I mean, there are fixes that fix obvious security problems, but that also all other fixes that fix something should be applied. But this in this model doesn't really happen because manufacturers only, and also Google and the SoC manufacturer only apply fixes more or less that have a CVE number attached. And this just isn't the case. And sometimes like it takes a year until the CVE number is out there. But the patch has been available like 1 year earlier and it could have been fixed already. This whole situation just means that it's a lot of out of tree code. So that's not in the upper layer LTS, which is branched from the actual mainline tree. And also some of the drivers are just of really questionable code quality, which you don't really want to look at them. So, to explain a bit the licensing situation there, Linux kernel itself is licensed under GPL 2.0. So that means every modified Linux kernel where existing GPL code has been modified has to be open source as well. Some vendors don't really care about this anyways, but this is another topic. I'm talking about the ones that where the kernel is open source and it has to be open source. One thing people often get wrong is that SoC, that there's like proprietary kernel modules, and this exists to some extent. For example, XFAT drivers do exist that are proprietary, but this is very much the exception, and most of the drivers that actually get used in the device are open source in the kernel. But SoC manufacturers like to implement drivers in user space. I'm not exactly sure why, but I guess it gets around like the GPL license requirement. It's also maybe easier to hire people. This applies to like camera driver, Bluetooth driver, and other drivers. But most of these drivers have some kind of kernel component that at least acts as a shim to forward a request from user space to the actual hardware through the kernel. It's also very much worth noting that Qualcomm has some open source user space hard parts, but there are also very important bits that are proprietary and you cannot look at them and modify them. This basically means that building a 100% open source system with this kernel is more or less impossible. Ubuntu Touch does attempts like part of it to open source the user space part or the non-hardware abstraction stuff user space. Via reusing Android libraries, and this goes via libhybris, which is an awesome piece of software. And you can see that Ubuntu Touch very much works. But it does have the proprietary user space daemons and libraries that's unfortunately unnecessary when you use the downstream kernel. And yeah, this can be solved by using a kernel with proper interfaces. So let's talk about a bit about x86. To be fair, I don't really know much about x86. Like, all my laptop and whatever is x86, but other than that, I haven't been really involved in kernel development there. But generally, ACPI, which is Advanced Configuration Power Interface, exists on x86 and ACPI tables. It's a standard that exists for like 20 years now that's used to discover and configure hardware components. But basically, on x86, the BIOS provides these ACPI tables, which is a description of the hardware, and then the kernel knows like how to begin the initialization of everything, how to talk to the devices. What's also different on laptops compared to mobile phones is that a lot of the hardware is on USB or PCI bus, which is an enumerable bus. So basically the host can ask like around like, hey, who's there? And then all of the devices respond. So for example, on my laptop, the touchpad, SD card reader, webcam is on USB bus, on PCI is Wi-Fi card, Ethernet controller, GPU. And all of these two buses use a vendor ID product ID combination to identify a particular device. For example, in the screenshot in the top on the bottom right, you can see an abbreviated version of the match table, basically, for my Ethernet PCI card in my laptop. And this basically just matches the vendor ID of Realtek, which is behind the macro here, and then the product ID of hex 8168. And this just tells the kernel like which driver it can use for this. And for USB, also a lot of standard USB device classes exist for various components. But for example, that's why you can plug in every keyboard and every mouse to a computer, because it is based around the standard, and there's just not really much to the device, to be honest. Okay, so why is it difficult in ARM? First of all, yeah, it doesn't use ACPI, which is not really the thing why it's difficult, but it's just different. Like historically, so like back in the 2. Whatever days, Linux 2. X days, Linux on ARM used board files, which was a way of writing a C file that contains description of the hardware, and this was then statically built into the kernel. But this, of course, meant that the kernel was only possible to run this kernel on one particular device because it was statically built into this. Since about Linux 3 point something, like device trees have really taken off, which is a technology originally from Spark, and it's part of the Open Firmware project. When you look into the code, you can often see like the OF underscore prefix. This is Open Firmware, but it's another word for device tree, let's say. And it's a structured way to describe hardware, and it's used by all modern kernels, all devices. And it describes things like clocks, GPIO, memory addresses, and much, much more. And then this device tree is loaded by a, in theory, generic kernel, where the kernel just knows based on this device tree, like which hardware is available, how to talk to it. And also, it's very much worth noting that device tree is operating system independent. So it's not just a Linux technology, but also, for example, uBoot uses it, which is a bootloader. And also, FreeBSD can use, in theory, the exact same device tree that's written, for example, for Linux. But as long as FreeBSD implements the same compatibility for this device tree, then it works. Okay, so why should we care about mainline Linux? Well, yeah, it's really first of all, it's really a great learning opportunity because you don't really get any insight into phones and ARM otherwise, in my opinion. Of course, you can run some single board computers, but they're already supported in basically all of the cases, and there are just so many phones out there, and you can pick up a phone for like 15 euros on the secondhand market, and you can get to work on it. With mainline kernel, you can run 100% open source user space and kernel on a phone without, which is super awesome in my opinion, because yeah, free software. And you can run PostMarketers on it, of course, very important. But also a project like Mobian, which is like basically mobile Debian. And also even Android via the AOSPM project. There's also another project, but I don't recall the name right now. Another point is that the code is maintained on kernel.org centrally, or more or less decentralized centrally. But this means that when there's a like a when the code is ugly or the driver has a bug, then you can fix it and send it upstream to kernel.org to the maintainers, and then it gets integrated into this one source tree in the end, and everybody can benefit from it. Also, by working on mainline Linux for phones, you really learn valuable engineering skills because every time you do something more or less on the device, you're debugging. You're debugging why it doesn't work. You're debugging and diving into the kernel subsystems and hopefully fixing your problem. And, well, maybe most important, you can brag about it online because you get into the like Hall of Fame of the Linux Git history. Okay, so I'm going to be focusing on Qualcomm on this talk, but it's because I personally have the most experience with it. It's probably also the best mainstream SoC vendor that you can use here because, because there's kind of Qualcomm and MediaTek, and MediaTek doesn't have as much support there. Also, when you work on a device, the age of the device matters in two ways, because new SoCs, they do have many of the basics already working by paid people, for example, by people from the company Linaro, where big companies pay them to work on these features for mainline. On the other hand, on old SoCs, the coders had a lot more time to mature and to iron out bugs and to get features. So there you might have more references like how things can work, and there are more similar SoCs and more similar devices already implemented. So you can look at other devices and see what the differences are. I'm also not going to be focusing on SoC bring-up because that's I definitely wouldn't recommend this first target because you have to get a lot of the basics done, like pin control, base clocks, and some other drivers that you really don't want to have as your first experience there. There are definitely very many SoCs out there, even just by one company. And there's definitely not a lot of them supported. There might be some work for most of them, but it's in some cases very minimal. There are some great SoCs to get started with, for example, for Qualcomm, the MSM8916, so Snapdragon 410, has super great support, like one of the best supports. Snapdragon 845 is also great, also is good support, but many other SoCs in between also well supported. Generally, high-end SoCs are more supported than like the mid-range or lower-end because just more people are kind of enthusiastic about it and focus on that more, I think. Okay, so what do you need for it? Unlock bootloader, which would be useful to flash your own software on it. Also keep the stock firmware prepared because if you break something or whatever, then you want to have like an image to go back onto. It's also very useful for charging the battery because in the start you definitely won't have, or in most cases you won't have the battery be charged while mainline is running because the charging controller just isn't set up yet and the driver's missing. So try to reboot into Android like every whatever time, and see what the charging percent, what the battery percentage is, and then charge the battery again there, to make sure that it doesn't run flat because there's also no protection against running the battery like lower than 0% until like the voltage is too low for actually the SoC to be alive. And this is not good for the battery also either. TWP, Tmall Recovery Project, is very nice because it's just one boot image. And you can boot this and then have a very uncomplicated environment where you can try different things in there. You should also know like what the device can do, especially like, if you pick up a secondhand device, like if it has NFC, video audio, USB-C, whatever. It's very useful to know because I've had it a couple of times where I didn't really know like what the device can actually do. So yeah, do this. Have the downstream kernel sources ready, so the one that Android ships with, because you often want to modify them to check something in downstream, add some debug statements to find out how the code works. Also, if the device is UART, which maybe not most devices, some devices have very hidden some on the board. But if you have access or find online where how to access it, it will be super useful because you will have much less trouble debugging some annoying problems with that. Okay, yeah, I'm going to briefly go over this. Basically, in downstream kernel or for example even in TWRP, just go find out like which devices there are and which drivers are used. For example, find which input device is for a touchscreen and for the volume buttons and for the other buttons. This isn't dev input. You can use EVTest, for example. Also, for example, vibration motor or Wi-Fi chipset. For all the backlight things and LEDs, you can mostly find like find sys slash minus dash minus name, dash minus name brightness, and then you can find like the different drivers that are currently active. But in downstream, like always, many more drivers are active and actually pretending to be there, even though they actually don't do anything. So, for example, for the brightness files, you can just echo like a number to it that's lower than lower equals max brightness, which is a different file and mostly the same directory, and then just see like what actually happens with this. So on newer devices, it's a bit annoying to extract the pre-built DTB, so the device tree from Android, which is different to the one that you want to have in mainline. Because newer devices have DTBO partition, which is